The 2012 general election campaign is likely to be a fight for every last vote, which means it will also be a fight over who gets to vote. That's how Alex Kasar begins his provocative piece in today's New York Times about voter ID laws and other measures that suppress voter turnout. Alex Kasar is a professor of history and social policy at Harvard, and he's author of The Right to Vote, The Contested History of Democracy in the United States, and he joins us from Stowe, Vermont. Welcome. Welcome to Radio Boston.
It's a pleasure to be back on the show.
So I want to ask you about some recent Massachusetts history about voting requirements, but first, your piece today makes the point that we like to think that over the years we've steadily expanded voting rights, but that in fact the trend goes back and forth. Sometimes we expand voting rights, then we move against voting rights. What's your sense of where we are today?
It's an interesting question. I think that we are now in a period of conflict over voting rights and maybe a bit of a period of contraction. And that's in contrast to the years between about, 1950-55 and the 1970s, which looked like they represented in some respects maybe the final expansion of the franchise with the passage of the Voting Rights Act and a lot of Supreme Court decisions that banned a number of laws in different states that had imposed obstacles on voters. For example, it used to be constitutional to have like a two-year residency requirement. That was knocked out. So we looked like we were in a period of very significant expansion. And I think that the 2000 election and its aftermath are looking like a kind of turning point.
And when you begin your piece saying that the 2012 general election is likely to be a fight for every last vote, which means it'll be a fight over who gets to vote in a very close general election, these laws could make a difference, right?
Right. I think that one of the lessons that was learned by political managers from the 2000 election, and I think this is part of the reason it's seen as a turning point, was that it was a reminder that in a close election, a small number of votes really can make the difference. I mean, in 2000 in Florida, a matter of hundreds of votes one way or the other determined who became president. I think the calculus is if you can produce a change in the electorate in a state, for example, of 5,000 people or 10,000 people, probably it won't matter, but it just might. And it could tip the election.
And so let me ask you about what's out there. We've seen all kinds of sort of partisan skirmishes over early voting, same-day registration, higher hurdles for ex-felons, voter ID laws. Now, critics say that these laws reduce voter turnout in certain demographics. What kind of voter tends to be most affected by these kinds of restrictions?
Well, in terms of the photo ID requirement, the people who are going to be most affected are people who do not have driver's licenses or passports. Well, most people in the United States, in fact, do not have passports. And with respect to driver's licenses, people who don't have driver's licenses tend to be the elderly, the young, and the poor, and overlapping groups there, for example, the young poor. With respect to other demographics affected by the assembly of laws, what we know is that voter turnout in the United States is correlated with class. It correlates with income and it correlates with education. A number of measures, such as early voting or third-party registration drives run by the League of Women Voters, to cite an example, are designed to increase the turnout of those demographics that turn out less. And ending those will likely reduce voting among those groups.
Now, proponents of these laws, and let's talk about voter ID, for example, will argue that they're intended to preserve the integrity of the ballot. Is there merit to that argument at all, or do you think at the heart these laws are intended to win some sort of partisan advantage?
I think there is a small bit of merit, which I'll come back to in a second. The problem with the argument that these laws are intended to protect the integrity of the ballot box is that the type of fraud that they would prevent, what's called in-person voter impersonation, I go to the polls and pretend to be you. As far as we know, that kind of fraud almost never happens. In Indiana, the first state to pass such a law, there was no recorded instance of in-person voter impersonation in the last 50 years. Now, I said at the beginning that there's a bit of merit. there is nothing necessarily irrational about having an ID requirement for voting. Most countries have it, but those are countries which have national ID systems and where it's the responsibility of the government or the state to make sure that everybody has an ID. In this case, what's being proposed is an ID requirement where it's up to the individual and not the state to make sure that everybody has the ID.
According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, 31 states require some form of identification to vote, and of those, 15 must include a photo. Is the trend toward requiring photo ID? Is that what you're seeing out there?
That's certainly the trend in the last 2 years. It's a trend that has been prompted by partisan combat. The trend has come from the Republicans, and it has accelerated since the Republicans took control of a number of state legislatures in the 2010 congressional elections.
So photo IDs are a relatively modern invention. What are some of the other ways that lawmakers have tried to make certain requirements for voting?
In the past, there were requirements that you had to bring to the polls or bring to registration your receipts that you had paid poll taxes, where there were requirements in the late 19th century and the early 20th century that if you were an immigrant, you had to bring your official sealed naturalization papers. There were also requirements in many places when you had a very highly mobile working class that you had to re-register every time you changed precincts. And all of these amounted to burdens which winnowed out the electorate.
So let me ask you about New England. As we mentioned, Massachusetts does not have voter ID requirements. Two other New England states, Connecticut and Rhode Island, have some sort of ID requirements. In Rhode Island, voters will have to show a photo ID starting in 2014. But tell us what happened in Massachusetts in 2000 when it came to inmates.
What happened in 2000 was the culmination of a remarkable story that had started several years earlier, which was, in effect, that inmates had the right to vote, as they had always had, and as is true in a few other states. In 1997, I think it was, a number of the inmates formed a kind of political action committee on criminal justice issues, and there was a response of outrage from then acting Governor Cellucci, which resulted in the state legislature in two successive sessions passing a draft of a constitutional amendment, which was then ratified by the people in 2000 that prevented inmates from voting. So after 200 years of inmates being able to vote in Massachusetts with no obvious deleterious consequences, they were disfranchised for having politically organized.
So what do you think the effect on the democratic process is of laws like that?
The reason why this is not a marginal issue, as it might have appeared to be 35 or 40 years ago, is that the size of our prison population, and if you include people who are on parole and probation, it's even larger, is enormous. And we're talking about a disproportionate concentration of those people in minority communities.
Alex Kesar, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure.
That's Alex Kesar. He's a professor of history and social policy at Harvard. He's also author of The Right to Vote, The Contested History of Democracy in the United States. And he wrote about that in the New York Times today.
Well, up next, 40 years of Title IX. We'll take a closer look at the landmark legislation and its lasting impact on athletics. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.